Welcome to Stock Talk, the new Stockhouse podcast series that brings you behind-the-scenes insights into trending topics from capital markets, influencers, and entrepreneurs, broadcasting from the heart of the financial district in beautiful downtown Vancouver. We are broadcasting in beautiful downtown Vancouver on the roof of the Vancouver Hotel. Today, I am joined by Frank Holmes. Frank is the Chief Executive Officer of US Global Investors and the Executive Chairman of Hive Blockchain Technologies. Hive trades on the Venture Exchange under the symbol HIVE. Welcome today, Frank. Thank you so much for joining me.
Cindy, it's great to be here for the martini party.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day.
The Stockhouse is throwing to basically keep the enthusiasm of adventure investing.
Exactly. Yes, it'll be quite the celebration. I'm so glad that you're joining us. And again, thank you so much for doing our keynote address at the event today. We really appreciate the fact that you come out and support us and do that every year. It's fantastic. Thank you. So let's talk a little bit about gold, since gold seems to be top of everybody's mind for many investors. Can you give some insights and talk a bit about your gold royalty ETF, the U.S. Global GoGo Gold, and perhaps even touch on the precious metal miners ETF, which is GOAU, is that correct?
GoGold.
All right, excellent. These have been outperforming many of larger competitors since inception. So can you give us an overview of those?
Well, let's talk about macro forces.
Excellent, okay.
You know, macro forces are so important because we can crystallize things and take complexity and follow the trend line rather than the headline. Because I think a lot of investors are getting disturbed over these negative headlines when the trend line is very bullish. And the other one I like to share with people is that bad news is good news. Because as soon as we get any bad news, the G20 finance ministers huddle together and they do everything to drop interest rates. The fact is unprecedented that almost $20 trillion in negative rates. Denmark is saying, we'll pay you to take out a mortgage.
Right.
and so we have something that's really quite remarkable to witness. And so why is that? Well, prior to 2008, the world was consumed with trade, dropping barriers to trade.
Right.
And after the crash, the psychology changed with the finance ministers and the head of the Federal Reserve's equivalent, central bankers, and they became their own oligopoly. Like, they're worried about OPEC. Well, there's a G20 finance minister, OPEC, of money. And we've seen things morph, where there was a trade war actually started back in 2009, the war on money. We had President Obama fat cat policies, et cetera. And it became more and more difficult to actually move money, open a bank account, open up a brokerage
right.
account. And it sort of escalated. And so when you look at this, that was the shock of 2008, 2009. And then these finance ministers became more consumed with synchronized taxation and regulation. The EU has been pushing these socialist policies with pretty words. And I always like to remind people that the slave ships that came over from Africa were hope and liberty.
Right.
The complete opposite. And the Patriot Act was not very patriotic. Obamacare didn't work for several reasons. And the biggest part is the millennials wouldn't pay.
Right.
Right. They voted for him, but it wouldn't pay for what was cheaper and better for everybody.
Yes.
So those voters, young voters, destroyed that. But that narrative doesn't get told to you. It's still this other narrative that's taking place. So how do you not get confused with the headline, follow the trend line?
Mm-hmm.
So the trend line is they're going to synchronize taxation and regulation. I think we're getting away from that. And now it's changing. And I think you can simplify 40% of the world's population are two countries, China and India.
Chindia. Right.
So what happens when they want to eat rice? What happens when they want to consume basketball shoes? It doesn't matter what it is. When you have 40% of the world's population with rising GDP per capita, that didn't exist 20 years ago.
Right.
They were, if you take a look at the consumption of gold by China and India 30 years ago, it was less than 10%. Today it's 53%.
Wow. Significant.
So why is that? It's correlated to GDP per capita. Now we're going to talk about trade. So what do we have? We have two countries, China and America. They're 40% of all global trade. So if they get into a battle of tax, they want equalization. And what all Trump wants is to say he wants a level playing field.
Right.
That's all. If you want to be able to sell cars here, then we can sell cars there, no taxes. Whatever it is, drop the taxes, drop the taxes, drop the taxes. And the Chinese want a disproportionate trading field. And the economy of America they want to sell into is $13 trillion and China's $3 trillion. It's just not going to happen anymore. And that is significant because it's 40% of the world's trade. So now we have consumers and they're driving global travel. Oh, China and India. In fact, the middle class of China is bigger than the U.S. today. But because it's 1.4 billion people, that middle class number gets lost. But if you look at dollars spent by American tourists, the middle class, so important, versus the Chinese outspent. And I was in Salzburg a couple of weeks ago, 50% of the tourists were Chinese. Last week when I was in the New York Stock Exchange, 50% of the tourists are Chinese. And that's another reason why I launched the JETS ETF from New York.
Right.
Because I could see that it's very expensive and difficult to build a new airport, but the rising, emerging middle class, they want to travel. And I think that this will bring peace and prosperity. I am much more bullish as Chinese go around the world and travel, like Americans started traveling 50 years ago all around the world. They start to change their attitudes towards the world.
Right.
And if you look at Canadian schools, a classic, a data point that shocked me, that at Western University, where I went to Huron College, that something like 90% of the international students are Chinese.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
And they make four times what they cost to go there than for a Canadian to go. Same course.
Wow.
So what happens is that they're going to come to Canada. They're going to see how beautiful Vancouver is.
Yes.
They're going to go back and they're going to want what we have.
Right.
And this is very, very, very bullish long term. So this is a very significant to me trend line to follow.
Fair enough. Makes sense. You recently put out a blog post yesterday, I believe, that I was just perusing, talking about an optimist's guide to airlines, as you kind of discussed. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that, crypto mining and gold. Can you sort of tell our listeners a little bit about that blog post?
A data point that always really shocked me 18 months ago, meeting Gabe Layden, who created Machine Zone. He told me that he processes 500 million instructions per second in 32 languages, which drives the traffic for mobile gaming, and that young boys, predominantly to men under 25, spend more money on mobile gaming than all the movies and all the music combined.
Wow.
So that, and what do they get when they're good at those mobile games? They get digital money. They don't need Bitcoin as a concept all of a sudden at my age to say, what is digital money? They've been growing up earning, and they can get upgrades. They can get new software. They can get special privileges to go to conferences or concerts, basically, where they all compete with each other.
Right.
So there's a secular trend taking place in digital money that's already basically been embedded in young kids.
That's very true. Yeah, very true.
So the Bitcoin phenomena demonstrates that you can do transactions, you can do this, and I remain very, very bullish on it. And I give you a classic. The peak in Bitcoin was when they came out with the futures market. And then JP Morgan knocked it all the way down until February of 2019, this year, when they launched their own coin, and that was the bottom. 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, right. 6,000. And then Facebook came out and they wouldn't let you advertise a year ago anything on crypto on their website. And all of a sudden they're coming with their Libra coin, 8,000, 9,000, 12,000, 13,000. So we have this big rally. All the central banks, the G20, get together. They're all worried about this phenomena. So 2 billion people use Facebook. All of a sudden, can you imagine all the data they have and all those people, credit cards, movement of money, what will the stable coin be backed by, what currency, all this stuff. As soon as the government starts saying, we've got to have meetings with you.
Right.
crypto starts to fall.
Yeah.
So a lot of crypto is being driven by a sentiment.
Yes.
So if the Senate's going to meet with them, it sells off. As soon as the meeting's over, it goes up. A Congress is going to see them, sells off, goes up. SEC is going to do a panel investigation on where they're going, immediately sells off, and then it comes back. So investors have to be aware of the DNA of volatility. The DNA of volatility over any rolling 10-day period for gold is 2%. Stock market's 3%. So right. Actually, gold is less volatile than the stock market.
Right.
Now, when it comes to crypto, when you're talking 15% moves. So can you stomach that? And that is speculation.
Right.
And I'm a big believer that a lot of money went into the crypto world because these young kids did not want to speculate in mining or cannabis stocks or any of these stocks because they can trade 24/7.
True. Yes.
$5 billion went into all these new alternative coins and all these storytelling, et cetera. And now they were out of compliance for many reasons. And there was a pushback in this, but which is healthy. I believe we need referees in any sporting event to stop cheaters. But I think what's really remarkable is that we have to try to inspire people to speculate now in new companies. Mm-hmm. And I think StockHost does a phenomenal job of educating, informing, and being that airport hub of information activity that the big banks aren't going to do.
Right.
See, the big banks have a fiduciary rule, the interpretation that came from socialist Europe that really hurt the small investor in the UK. Then it comes to Canada. And then goes to the U.S. and they all have different interpretations. So in Canada, basically says my age that I have disposable money to speculate, that's too risky. So therefore, no one can talk about junior mining stocks
right.
or blockchain or Hive or it's too speculative. And so where should they go? Casinos, lottery tickets, racetracks? No, they should be investing in the formation of capital to create new inventions, new exploration, new discoveries, new medical devices, new delivery systems for medicine, etc. We need to have that. And I think StockHost does a phenomenal job in facilitating the sharing of information. And that's why I come and do this, Cindy.
Excellent.
Because I believe what you do is so important because the big banks basically said, no, you brokers can't talk to people my age. You know, I'm not that old, but they're deeming it as being too speculative.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Those were all amazing points. You touched a little bit on millennial investors and educating investors as we do on StockHost. And we saw quite a shift in 2018, obviously, with our demographic hitting a much more millennial base. It was our biggest percentage of people on site.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And what they were researching, of course, was cannabis at the time, because that was sort of their entry into capital markets, perhaps mm-hmm. mostly for the first time. So we've sort of been saying that cannabis has kind of been the gateway drug, if you will, into capital markets for a lot of people. So they were investing in cannabis at the time.
The inducer or the seducer.
That's right. That's right. So they were looking at cannabis for a long time. We've now seen that shift reverting back to a better balance between mining and exploration, mining metals and cannabis. So is it time? Gold's in a bit of a dip. Is it time to buy gold?
Gold is just doing exactly what it's a perfect asset class. Gold is the second best performing asset class in the past 20 years. The largest hedge fund in the world, Bridgewater, Ray Dalio, advocates 6 to 10% in gold. He is a big investor in the royalty companies. And so one has to really deeply respect that, mm-hmm. That you would have $170 billion. And that means you're going to have $17 billion in gold-related investments.
Right.
You know, he's a powerhouse. So I think that those are the important parts for investors to recognize that they should have a weighting, an exposure. And most of the active fund managers in Canada are substantially underweighted gold exposure.
Yeah.
Either zero.
Yeah.
Or a little bit,
yeah.
But they should, if they want their performance, they should be at a higher number on basic any quant asset allocation. The world's changing. The formation of capital, I was just reading yesterday, robo-allocators in the U.S., Betterment has brought in $20 billion. This whole quant experience is really, I've found it fascinating, which allowed me to get involved with Hive. The Hive blockchain is all digital money, and had to learn to say, well, how things are shifting, those demographic and secular changes. And Hive became the proxy. And I think it was the number one technology click through for on Stockhouse.
Yes, it was.
And we received recognition for that. And so we have over 10,000, I think, shareholders in the Bridge of the Box. And it became that proxy rather than going to trade Bitcoin or Ethereum because they thought it was too risky in some of these exchanges.
Right.
Which, and then we went through a horrible proxy battle. I've never been in a proxy battle. Usually, you know, I'm a portfolio manager. I get to play God. You know, yes, no, I'll give you my vote. And all of a sudden I'm being attacked.
Right.
And I'm being attacked because they say I'm too old. Or then they larger. And then they say there's, for me, it was all about transparency and accountability. We've been able to get that.
Yeah.
We showed the capital markets. We shrunk it during that bear market to two people. We generated $16 million of revenue per employee.
Wow.
I mean, what? That's like a royalty company.
Yeah.
And when we look at Goldman Sachs, they're only $1 million. So I was really thrilled by that. We made money in the worst quarter. We should have, people thought we'd lose money. But so I'm really tickled. Our CFO, Darcy, based here in Vancouver, has done an exceptional job of taking on those responsibilities. And I think the crypto space is going to stay. And then it goes to the quant. Your first question, it's all digital and quant. I noticed that 70%, if you look at stock market trading in 20 years, 40% of all trading has now gone to what's called dark pools.
Right.
So we're left with 60%. Out of that 60%, 70% of that are quant driven. Sentiment, word choice, mathematical models, etc. So now, how is that impacting? And that's what led me to create GoAU. And actually, first was Jets ETF. It's quant thought processes. And then was Go Gold, GoAU, listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And when we did our back testing, it took 8,000 hours of research. And what we found was that there were certain factors that help you screen stocks, not pick them. Other ones are very good for picking stocks. And then the ratios, like making baking, you can't just, you know, put equal numbers. So there's different percentages, and that's our proprietary number.
Gotcha.
So we have five factors. They're proprietary. And our back test has said it outperformed the GDXJ 92% of the time in rolling 12-month periods. We launched it 2 years ago, and it's done that. So I'm thrilled. It's been growing. It's a far, far better that it's, I don't know one active gold fund manager in Canada that's outperformed it.
Fantastic.
Even my own active gold fund managers have struggled to be able to beat it because it takes away the emotions.
Yes.
And it identifies. So anyone that does something stupid with their company, like Osisko Royalties, you know, go ahead and do something that's not a royalty company. Immediately, the stock falls 27%.
Right.
Well, who are the people who sold it down? The quants.
Right.
So you have to recognize in the space, the quants are very significant, and investors going in even small cap have to have better mathematical disciplines of looking at management.
Right. And it is your secret sauce, but you're right. It's precise. It's not just willy-nilly. I like the baking analogy. That makes perfect sense. It's precision, and you need to follow those rules. You have spoken a lot about the barriers to private investing, and it's too hard for investors to sort of make those transitions or get involved in different things. First asset classes, more and more companies are staying private. So what does that mean to you for public capital markets companies?
Well, for speculation, it's going to be, have to be public money to speculate.
Yeah.
And so what happens when you look at those people that fill these documents, I always like to ask a question. The regulatory and the lawyers that make you fill all these questions out for a accredited investor,
yes,
they have never made an investment themselves. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's like trick questions on page 6. Does it coordinate with page 16? And it's so simple. You know, this is your income.
Yeah.
And that makes you an accredited investor. And here's your bank accounts. And here's your copy of your passport. And how much are you going to buy? And you have to buy a minimum $25,000. You can buy $1 million. It should be. But it goes on pages and pages.
Yeah.
And so that makes it even more difficult to attract people to say, why should I speculate that?
Right.
If I do that same type of work, I'd rather go to Investec to go ahead and buy new companies coming that way, because it's a better way to speculate.
Yes.
Do you follow?
Yeah.
If I'm going to do that paperwork, it has to be a much bigger number.
Right.
So, but I shouldn't do that because it's too risky.
Yes.
So I'm a credit investor. I'm going to put $25,000, $50,000, then make it so it's easy for me to do the forms.
Yeah.
They're the barriers to entry that I see.
For sure.
Clearly written by people that never make a private placement themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So, and it does make it difficult. We've actually recently launched our new Stockhouse Select deal room as well. So that is a way for accredited investors to get involved in deals that perhaps they don't see every day.
Right. And will you help them fill out the forms?
We will help them fill out the forms. So this is part of sort of breaking down those barriers to entry for people to get involved.
That's a great, deals. great way.
Yeah.
And it's just to make it simpler. That's all.
Yeah, for sure.
If apps can make it easier to fly, you could do so many things with your apps now. Why can't they make an app easier to, if you're already proven as a credit investor, to make decisions?
Yes, exactly.
But if you're going to help with that, fantastic.
Yeah, we're doing our best. Okay, so Frank, we have chatted now. I could chat with you all day, obviously. So is there anything else that you would like investors to know about what you're up to or what you're doing, just to sort of wrap up?
The capital markets and the speculative end that drive Canada is so important, is what I've seen, this thing called MiFID II.
Okay.
And MiFID II came out of the socialist Europe. And they use these words to make it sound as progressive, but now progressive is socialist. And it's all morphing, but they don't want these conferences. They don't want people aggregating together unless the government's controlling it all. And it's sad, but I've just seen the research fall. $1 billion of salaries were cut in Wall Street.
Really?
Yeah. So the stock house have become more important. And then you'll see in the U.S., the investors are going to all the different publications of Agora.
Yes.
And why? Because they're trying to get investment decisions, ground floor ideas, be the next, is this the next Steve Jobs adventure investing, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I think that those publications and what you're doing are going to be very, very important for ushering in that people actually create more jobs than going to the racetrack or the casino.
Right.
To speculate on exploration or R&D, et cetera. And that's one reason. The last thing was I became the chairman of a company called Goldspot.
Yes.
And why? 9 PhDs. We have these young people, 30 years old, with PhDs and tectonic plate shifts and applying Monte Carlo simulation models. You know,
what?
Yeah. And Montreal has become a hub for AI. So we're doing a lot of work. Yesterday was a great press release by Yamana. I've helped identify projects for them. And what it does is de-risk. So the application of picking GoAU, a digital, Hive Digital.
Yes.
And now we have Goldspot. I think that Goldspot is one of those little microcaps of $10 million. I just bought more stock in the company. I think it is just very exciting to be with these young brains.
Yeah.
And they're going to help find more ounces of gold.
Excellent. Okay, great. Well, Frank, thank you so much for joining us. Again, a beautiful venue that we're in on the roof of the Vancouver Hotel. It's very iconic, and I'm thankful to be joined by such an icon in the industry.
No, you're very
so thank
kind.
You
thank
so
you, Cindy.
Much.
Love your energy.
Thanks so much, Frank. Again, I am joined by Frank Holmes. He's the CEO of US Global Investors and the executive chairman of Hive Blockchain Technologies. Again, Hive trades on the Toronto Venture Exchange under the symbol HIVE. And again, thanks so much, Frank. Always a pleasure speaking to you.
Well, thank you.
Just a reminder to follow us on social media at Stockhouse for the latest updates on all your favorite public companies in North America. For more in-depth coverage, industry news, and to connect with our active investor community, you can visit our website at stockhouse.com. Also, don't forget to visit our new and improved Stockhouse Deal Room on site for unique and exclusive private placement opportunities only available on stockhouse.com.